The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
MSW Media.
Rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 136 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It's Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. I realize, patrons, that during the bonus episode this past weekend, I said that it was week 134 when it was actually week 135. That was an error. We are now, in fact, on week 136, so I apologize for that. But hello, I'm Allison Gill.
Hey, and I'm Pete Strzok, and it's completely pardonable, Allison, when we're busy in the midst of going through not one, not two, not 15, but 19 booking photos. It's only natural that perhaps the dates blend together. But we have so much to cover today, including all those 19 defendants who have been booked now at the Fulton County Jail. We have filings from Mark Meadows and Jeffrey Clark, including a hearing for Meadows' motion to remove his case to federal court, and speedy trial requests from both Kenneth Cheesebro and Sidney Powell.
Yes, the Cheesebro, who doesn't stand alone anymore in his speedy trial request.
I suspect he doesn't want his new friend that has joined him on that speedy trial request. It's like,
yeah, he was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I'm underage at the bar. I think I can pull it off. And then my 14-year-old kid brother saddles up next to me and asks for a beer, too. It's like, fuck.
Oh, so true. So one of those 19, by the way, Harrison Floyd, who was booked at the Fulton County Jail last week, remains in jail and had an affidavit out for his arrest earlier this year for attacking two FBI agents. We also are going to cover the fact that Jim Jordan is launching an investigation into Fannie Willis now, along with a hearing in a totally separate case that I got to see today for Pete Navarro. Since we cover Pete on this show, I figured I would tell you about my adventures in the courtroom with Pete Navarro. But first, we have to thank our new patrons. We have 57 new patrons this week.
Amazing.
My gosh. Thank you all so much. Kelly Kozak, JK, Barbara Kaufman, a little bit of Sandra in the Sun, a little bit of Mary All Night Long, a little bit of Jessica, Here I Am, a little bit of you. And then it gets cut off because we only have 129 characters for what your name can be. I'm assuming you would have continued with the entire Mambo No. 5 chorus if you only had more space. Stephanie Snyder, Sort of Damocles, love it, Betty Knight, Abby Normal, Louise, Boo, Leslie Winter, Sharon Clayton, Bernadette Erickson, Kevin Branch, Big Aussie Idiot, or should I say Aussie, Kit Irwin, Lori, Jean McNeil, and Jennifer Merlis. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm hoping that you all are loving the bonus episode. At the $2 per episode level, you get that basically a whole full free second episode every week. You get twice as many episodes. I hope you're enjoying them. All right, we have a lot to cover in Georgia. A lot went down since we last spoke for this main public episode. Let's start there. First of all, Meadows and Clark filed motions to delay their surrender until after they had their hearings to remove their cases to federal court. And both of those motions were denied by Judge Jones, who's the federal judge in the Northern District down there. He's the closest federal district. He said, you had 2 weeks, and the removal motions have nothing, no bearing on your surrender. So just like everybody else, you'll have to go and surrender. And they did. We got 19 different mugshots. All 19 were booked. Of course, the height and weight for Donald Trump was sent in ahead of time, I guess, on the honors system. So he turned out to be 6'3", 215.
It's like Muhammad Ali in his prime, right?
Yeah. Okay. But you know what? Okay. Will I get that courtesy when I, you know, when and if I'm ever booked at Rice Street? No. But here we are. Trump raised over $7 million so far on his mugshot. And, you know, we've had some people write in, Pete, and ask, like, can he do that? Like, isn't it copyrighted? Nope, that is public domain. He can do with it. And so can we, if we choose, as we will. So nothing's stopping us from doing any of that.
Yeah. And the absurd part was one of his attorneys, maybe his PR person, but I think an attorney was warning people like, oh, if you use it without his permission, we're coming after you. It's like, good luck with that. That's, again, it's completely in the public domain for anybody to use. I'm curious to see who it's one of those odd things where both sides want to buy and use copies of it for completely different reasons. But that image, beyond the simple grift for Trump right now. I mean, I think, you know, when you go and pull out the old Encyclopedia Britannica or World Book or whatever it is on your shelf and from 1972, and you look about some article about Dwight D. Eisenhower, it's going to be the same thing in the future when, you know, folks are looking back in the early 2020s and that face pops up at them. It's forever going to be there. First president, yeah. Hopefully only president, indicted for so many crimes.
Yeah. And, you know, he's down 6 points in the latest Marist poll since he surrendered. I like how he tweeted on Twitter, which I still call Twitter, you know, never surrender. And he did that the day he surrendered. So that was very interesting.
Just immediately after surrendering. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, it's got like 1.5 million likes or something. It's went pretty viral. So I am of the mindset that these indictments are not going to help his polls and his ratings and his chances. It might help his chances of getting the primary nomination, but definitely not the general election win. So, you know, we'll see how that all turns out. It's still very early in the election process, but he's down 6 points since his surrender. Now, I want to talk about the only person not out on bond. That's Harrison Floyd. He was part of the conspiracy to intimidate Ruby Freeman. If you'll remember, there was a group of folks, including him and Trayvon Coody, who is Kanye West's publicist, and a third person who decided to wear his priest collar to his mugshot, who were intimidating Ruby Freeman, knocking on her door, talking to her neighbors, trying to get her to say that she could be in a lot of deep trouble or in danger. Her life is in danger if she doesn't say that she was, you know, committing voter fraud or helping commit voter fraud in favor of Joe Biden. But he was kept in jail without being let out on bond. Now, I spoke to a former DC AUSA who looked up his pending federal case. First of all, he assaulted earlier in this year. He assaulted two FBI agents who were trying to serve him with a federal grand jury subpoena in the Jack Smith investigation, which is our first indication, by the way, all year that Jack Smith is investigating the intimidation of Ruby Freeman, which I think is a significant development in that particular case. But the public docket for Floyd has not had a single entry in over 3 months. Now, the affidavit that was filed in May, which was in support of his, it was like the probable cause to issue an arrest warrant and describes what happened with these two FBI agents. It lists only a misdemeanor under Title 18 U.S. Code 111A, simple assault, which carries a 1-year maximum sentence. But aside from that affidavit, there's no preliminary hearing on the docket. There's no indictment on the docket, no sealed motions on the docket or entries on the docket, no motions to continue a preliminary hearing, which is what you might expect to see if there was a cooperation deal in the works or a pre-indictment resolution being worked out. So, Pete, I can't help but wonder, and I don't mean to sound like Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City, I couldn't help but wonder, is he cooperating with the feds? Because why would there be no entries on the docket after an affidavit and warrant were issued for the arrest of assault on two FBI agents?
Well, it's definitely weird. I mean, right after you're arrested, you have, you know, you're brought in and you're booked, right? Just like we saw down in Fulton County, the federal equivalent of that, where you get fingerprinted and have your photograph taken, and you have an initial appearance where you're, you know, told the charges and you're advised of, you know, various rights to counsel. And if you can't afford it, you can have a court-appointed attorney. And there isn't anything out there. Now, just to back up a little bit, you know, according to the Washington Post reporting, this is from the affidavit. Agents went to his apartment in Rockville, Maryland back on February 23rd. So, you know, that's 6 months ago, right? Well, a little more than 6 months ago. So to your point about finding out that Jack Smith is looking into this, not only is he looking into it, he was doing it half a year ago. And they were doing that, you know, they were at the point of trying to give him a subpoena 6 months ago. Now, what I suspect, you know, whether they wanted his testimony to lock him in because he was a potential subject, whether they wanted his testimony to try and get some sort of cooperation agreement against, you know, somebody else, whoever was directing him, presumably Rudy or others, we don't know. But it's not, you know, when I went back and read it, they initially tried to track him down through his mother. According to the affidavit, the agents gave the mother their business card. She texted him the information from the business cards. They talked to him on the phone. They talked to him over the apartment intercom, and then eventually saw him and tried to give him the grand jury subpoena. And after a lot of back and forth with him not wanting to take it, they said, fine, we're going to, you know, follow you in and leave it at your apartment door. And then as he went in, they kind of tried to put the subpoena into the door, and it got wedged between the door jamb and the door. He opens it up and then approaches one of the agents screaming, allegedly, "Who the fuck do you think you are?" standing chest to chest and then knocking him backward with his body. So this isn't some little, you know, kind of, it was very anime. And then later he says, you know, he was going into his house to get a gun. And then only when he saw an agent, and he said, "I don't know who you are." And the agent tried to show him his credentials to explain it to him. And when he became violent, he, you know, seeing the other agent potentially reaching for his gun, then he disengaged. But this is not some little, you know, verbal altercation. It strikes me, and it's not something where somebody was just, "Oh, I was surprised, I didn't know you're coming." Come on, you had your mom telling you that agents were trying to track you down, and you were talking to him on the phone, and you talked to him on the intercom. So it doesn't strike me that he certainly was not cooperating at the time. The fact that he is sitting still in Rice Street Jail. And again, this is not, you know, federal jails aren't great, but Rice Street is terrible. I mean, it is not any condition that any place that anybody would want to be. And by all accounts, and we talked about it last episode about some of the, you know, the Atlanta local reporting of talking to people who are coming out of Rice Street Jail, that it's not a place you want to be. So if he were cooperating, I find it hard to envision a scenario where he's kind of sitting there stranded high and dry. But to the point of, like, and we talked about this before too, right? The state of Georgia, there is a presumption of detention, that if you are not, the bail is not assumed. And so given this past history of violence, it'll be interesting to see when he eventually processes through and what the conditions of bail are. But it's kind of weird that nothing's on the docket. I wonder if there are future charges coming and they didn't want to just have the assault and wanted to continue to build the case. At some point, you know, they'll have to decide one way or the other. I don't know the law well enough to tell you what happens if they don't charge him at some point. Does that simply go away when the statute of limitation tolls, or if there's some other abbreviated time frame that kicks in because he was charged? So it's a weird, and we'll see. But I think he's got a lot of trouble ahead of him.
Yeah, it's definitely odd, because we would imagine that there would have been an indictment. And with what he did to the agents, it doesn't seem like misdemeanor level stuff. I could be wrong. Not sure what their thinking is, not sure what they're doing. I just wanted to put that out there, because it's weird that there's absolutely nothing on the docket, no preliminary hearings, but there is an affidavit. Maybe the arrest warrant wasn't approved. I don't see how that's feasible, though.
Yeah, and you wonder if there's something like, you know, you can have like a pretrial, like an agreement, right? Or something like, well, okay, we're going to try and work this out. Give us some time, and we're not going to formally charge you. Let's talk and figure out what testimony you might give and what the information we gather about you is, and try and work something out, right, before you're formally charged, to buy time, just to have a little back and forth with his attorneys about, you know, what he could or might be able to provide in terms of testimony for the government's case. But it's weird.
Because you would normally see a continuance for the preliminary hearing if they were trying to work that stuff out. And we don't even have that.
And you could seal it, right? I mean, something, if you did have cooperation, I can envision a scenario where you might want to seal that, because you don't want to give co-conspirators or subjects or targets of the investigation information that would lead them to believe that you were cooperating, if that's what's going on, or even that you were potentially negotiating for cooperation. But at some point, you got to get something on the docket, even if it's sealed. So it's weird. So, you know, stay tuned. Again, just this, the Georgia charges against them certainly precipitated, I'm sure, a lot of things. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some more information coming out about what his status is with Jack Smith and that investigation.
Yeah, and what his status is with Fulton County. And we'll keep you posted. We have a lot more to get to, including more patrons to thank, but we do have to take a quick break. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary.
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me, in a courtroom, how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped
of kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
Hey, welcome back. We've got a few more patrons to thank. Brent Whittington, Marianne Colvin, Sherry Easterly, Kamanoa, Ella Heffler, Susan Lefevre, William Dorholt, Ian Frank, Danielle, Sharon Tikalski, Two Tribbles and a Grudge, Dee Dee, Naomi, Barbara Ford, Hel Toupet, Kelly Kallstrom, Janny Panett, and Jane Sykes. Thank all of you so much. You make this program go, and we couldn't do it without you, and just absolutely thankful for your support. So let's then stay and look at what Mark Meadows, Jeffrey Clark, and three other electors who have all filed motions to remove their cases to federal court. Jeff Clark, his hearing is set for September 18th. And in response to that, Fani Willis has said his request is based on, quote, a misread of the applicable statutes, a misapprehension of the binding case law, and a fundamental misunderstanding of criminal procedure. the three is, which again, you know, it's like I was curious until the very end whether or not Jeff Clark was going to be a fugitive or not, or make his, you know, last minute travel arrangements to haul his butt down to Georgia, but he did.
He made it.
And, you know, nick of time. I think he went in late at night. And there was, you know, talking about like, you know, height, weight mismatches. I think he is listed as like 5'2", and that's wrong. I mean, the people found photographs and he's clearly like a, you know, high 5 foot, hovering around 6 feet. So whether that was a keyboard keystroke error or him playing games like Trump did, who knows? But it is, you know, another error on the data. Now, the three electors that are joining Meadows and Clark say that their quote-unquote jobs as contingent electors makes them federal officers, and so their cases should be moved to federal court. Now, Meadows, his hearing is underway as we're taping this on Monday. Fani Willis is arguing against it, and it's a, you know, it's kind of a really bold move, and we can talk about this in a little bit. I think I and probably you and many, many other folks were really surprised to see Meadows testifying. And Fani Willis's argument is like, look, Meadows had no authority to engage in the charged conduct because of the Hatch Act. This was not anything that he was doing trying to overturn the results or find different electors or scratch up votes. That's not something that's political activity that he shouldn't be doing. And because it's outlawed because of the Hatch Act, he didn't have official authority to do it at all. And going on, this is a quote from one of her filings. In his notice, the defendant, that's Meadows, makes no mention of the fact that every single one of the activities giving rise to his indictment constitutes impermissible political activity, which a chief of staff may not lawfully perform under color of office. As noted above, federal law forbids any employee of the executive branch from, quote, using his official authority or influence for the purpose of interfering with or affecting the result of an election, unquote. Now, at least as of now, Meadows spent more than 2.5 hours testifying during the morning session, declaring that he took an extremely wide-ranging view of his responsibilities as chief of staff and viewed that role as encompassing nearly all his actions, prosecutors say amounted to corrupt pressure on Georgia officials. Now, if a federal official or if a federal judge agrees that Meadows' actions plausibly fell within the scope of his federal duties, the case may get moved into federal court and Meadows may be immune from the charges against him because the arguments to move it to federal court is ostensibly the same as his argument for immunity. Now, it's not just a one-sided testimony for Mark Meadows. He was cross-examined, and during cross-examination, times growing chilly, prosecutor Anna Cross challenged Meadows to come up with any situation that he would view as outside the scope of his job duties. And the only one that old former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows could offer up was, well, speaking at a campaign rally. Hmm. And then things he said things.
That's interesting,
in my opinion,
because it's been ruled upon by the courts that speaking at the January 6th rally at the Ellipse is not part of your job as a federal employee. So it's interesting that he uses that one example, the one thing that the courts ruled on with regard to that, to that kind of activity.
Yeah. And then he started making statements that, you know, started, in my opinion, started to strain credulity, given that he, you know, this expansive view of his role as chief of staff, given these statements that, well, I, you know, attended most every meeting.
I was the gatekeeper.
But he did say on several occasions, look, I had no knowledge of the Trump campaign's efforts to contest the election results. None. None whatsoever. And when he was asked about an Oval Office meeting he attended with Trump and Michigan state lawmakers, Meadows said he didn't know that the campaign was contesting the results in that state. Again, it's kind of like the federal government's response to January 6th. We didn't know there was going to be a big, potentially violent protest. Who in the United States of America did not know the campaign was contesting the results of the states at the time when Michigan state lawmakers, and granted it was a little early, but by the time they were rolling into town, it just strains credulity. And then, you know, the other thing is, be whatever the impact on his Fulton County charges, you can bet that Jack Smith and his prosecutors and investigators are listening to every single thing that Mark Meadows is saying to figure out whether it's consistent with what Mark Meadows has told them and whether or not it's consistent with what witnesses, other witnesses, have told them about what Mark Meadows said or did.
And that's saying, why I was so surprised he was going on the stand today. I was like, wow. First of all, he could implicate himself and his co-defendants, and he's going to be cross-examined, and this all can be used anywhere else.
Yeah, and what it, you know, some decent analysis, I forget who was speculating this, but I think it's right on, is like, it's like a high stakes. There's a lot of risk to doing that, and typically the only reason you would, in my opinion, do that is if you cannot find, if you're on Meadows' side, cannot find any other witness able to get into the record the statements and facts that you are presenting, because not only does it put you at a lot of jeopardy, it clearly exposes you to cross-examination, and now you're on the record with a lot of things that, again, just how can you claim to be omnipresent with nearly unbounded authority as chief of staff as part of your job description, but at the same time say, oh, I didn't know that they were trying to contest the election results. Oh, I didn't
even
know.
Even I tweeted when the two Michigan guys were going to the Oval Office. I'm like, they're there so that Trump can try to get them to overturn the results in Michigan. Like, all the lawsuits, did he miss all
right, and so, okay, and then, right, remember when all the congressmen and women, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think, and Biggs, and all the rest went up in mid-December? Mark, were you there for that meeting? Really? What do you, there was no discussion then or any other time about contesting the election results? All the lawsuits that, you know, I think it was Louis Gohmert and all these folks filed? No idea. None. Zero. Come on. Come on.
Or the time when Pete Navarro went on TV and said what he was doing, or Boris right. Epstein went on TV and said they were going to do a coup, like, missed all that too.
Yeah, it's my defense is I'm a stupid son of a bitch, and I'm too dumb. You know, it's like, it's the Don Jr. too dumb to collude. It's that's the defense. Good luck. But he's facing two charges in Georgia, racketeering and soliciting Raffensperger to violate his oath of office. Raffensperger is recording right now. Everybody's back in the courtroom, and because it's the federal, again, going on at the federal level, no laptops or phones are allowed. So we don't have any updates about the afternoon testimony. We should soon. And where others, including Brad Raffensperger, who Fonnie Willis has notified a potential need for his testimony, could be called. So we'll see what comes out. I expect, we'll have some pretty, you know, compelling and interesting testimony from the government's witnesses to see what they have to say about what Mark Meadows said. So there's, stay tuned. We should have some updates certainly for the bonus episode, and absolutely by next week. So with that, I think we got to take a break, Allison, and we'll get back to thank some more patrons.
Yeah, we do. And I, you know, I got it before we run out to break here. I don't think they were bringing Meadows back on the stand for the afternoon session. I don't think they're going to finish this hearing today, Monday, as we record this. And then, of course, I don't think there'll be a ruling from the bench either. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, you know, like you said, we'll be reporting what we can on the bonus episode. And then we'll have a full, a full deep dive on it next week on the next episode. All right, let's take a quick break. And we'll come back. We've got more for you. So stick around.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Some more patrons to thank. My goodness, I'm continually amazed and grateful and humbled by how many of you are supporting this show. We have Shanna Ween, Cynthia Cheryl, Stuart Gardner, Nancy, hashtag arrest them all. Are we there yet? Chris Watkins, Blair Larson, Susan Viltrakis, Aiden King, Jessica M., Rebecca, Iridium, Brian, Ellen C. Elwell, Lindsay, Bresnahan, Ben Sartori, Kathleen Garner, Jiren S., I hope I'm pronouncing that right, maybe Jiren S., and Jennifer Childs. Again, if I mispronounce your name, I'm truly, truly sorry, but thank you so much for supporting the show. All right, the cheese no longer stands alone, right? We've got Kenneth Cheesebro, and he has filed for a motion for a speedy trial down in Fulton County. And Fonnie Willis came right back and said, sure, Cheesebro, how about October 23rd of this year? And the judge said, heck yeah, I'm down. Judge McAfee, he's like, October 23rd is great. The only difference is Fonnie Willis wanted to try all 19 defendants on October 23rd. She is ready to go on this whole case. But the judge approved October 23rd only for Cheesebro. Now, Fonnie Willis has not filed a response yet or an argument saying that it needs to be all 19. But as it stands right now, it's just Cheesebro on 10/23. That's what's approved by the court. I figure they're likely trying to avoid having Trump use advice of counsel against them. Like, if Trump goes after they do, he can't throw them under the bus as hard. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But if he does use advice of counsel, he'll have to take the stand. So that's dumb. But, you know, this is stupid Watergate. So, anything goes. But that also might not be the strategy here. I am not sure. But Sidney Powell also filed for a speedy trial. And the way speedy trial works down in Georgia, it's not 70 days like federal. It doesn't have to be done during this session of the court, but before the end of the next session. And so that puts us at right around the end of October for this particular court. So October 23rd. And, you know, like you said, Cheesebro's like, oh, man, Sidney Powell? Nah, come on.
Wingman. Hey.
Talk to me, Goose. that's what's happening with those filings. And we'll wait to get more either response from Fonnie Willis or additional information on Powell. The judge has approved Trump's arraignment night. We know that Fonnie Willis wanted September 5th. The judge has calendared it for arraignment for everyone on September 6th. Did I say September 5th or January? I forget. But anyway, she wanted September 5th. They get September 6th. It's Trump is going to be arraigned September 6th at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. All other defendants will be arraigned that same day in 15-minute increments. So it'll kind of be, that's a lot of people in one place in one day. A lot of media is going to be there. It's going to be a zoo, I imagine. We'll see if there's any shenanigans that go down, but the judge is intending to just arraign them on a conveyor belt 15 minutes at a time.
Right. Four defendants an hour and 19. So that is, you know, doing the math, that's almost 5 hours. 5 hour assembly line of a parade of the mugshots that we've been looking at. So, and I, you know, Trump, that's an early, you think, so here's the question for you. Do you think he spends the night in Georgia? Or do you think he has an early morning from Bedminster to have another 800 motorcycle police procession from Bedminster to Newark Airport and fly down.
Does he have a property down there to stay at?
And in Georgia? I don't think so, but we'll see. But
I mean, he's only flying up from Florida, right?
Although I think he's in Bedminster, but until he goes back after Labor Day to Mar-a-Lago.
I'd probably head down to Mar-a-Lago and then fly up from there in the morning. He's the defendant that has a private jet and gets motorcades. So, and you know what, he likes to be late to stuff. So we'll see how that turns out. But yeah, 9:30 in the morning is pretty early for him. Although he doesn't really sleep, right? He's up truthing all night on his social media platform. That's also under federal criminal investigation. And that's interesting. By the way, I haven't heard any updates on that investigation either. I was waiting that we had heard that, you know, a couple people have been indicted for mismanagement of funds and wire fraud and stuff, but I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on that money that came in from Russia that was used
If I'm here alone reporting. I am too. I mean, I think there is some movement about the merger between Truth Social and the SPAC, Digital World acquisition, I think is still alive. I think they're looking for some sort of like delayed, additional time to make it happen. But the fact that, that's not dead in the water, I don't know that there's going to be some massive, set of charges coming either criminally or civilly, but we'll see. I mean, there's clearly all kinds of bizarre, weird, unsavory,
And Trump might not be directly implicated in that either. It might just be Devin Nunes. Would not be such a bummer.
Yeah, yeah.
Good old Dev. All right, so Jim Jordan's back. It was nice not to have to talk about him for a minute, but he has now announced an investigation into Fonnie Willis. He's putting 18 House Republicans in districts that Biden won. He's putting them at risk by potentially forcing them to vote on subpoenas for this investigation into Fonnie Willis, right? And here's a quote from Greg Sargent at the Washington Post. It's highly unlikely GOP leaders, despite their public bluster, have any intention of letting things proceed that far, meaning allowing this investigation to get to the point where they vote on subpoenas. The whole project is almost surely doomed, a doomed charade at the outset. And we have recent history to back this up. Where's all the subpoenas for Alvin Bragg in his investigation? Because Jim Jordan launched an investigation into the Manhattan district attorney, if you remember. And that just sort of puttered out like everything Jim Jordan does. Jim Jordan wants internal communications between Fonnie Willis and Jack Smith. He's contending that there's some sort of deep state coordination going on. The latest from them is that somebody, I think Jay Brad or somebody from special counsel, had a meeting at the White House ahead of the indictments. And that means that there's some sort of coordination or collusion or, something, some deep state situation. Nobody's in Jim Jordan's weaponization committee. They aren't asking about John Durham meeting with Bill Barr every week over bourbon and cigars, but they really want to know about this one special meeting that I don't even have. I don't even think there's confirmation that it's happened, although I haven't really looked into it because I tend not to look into deeply the things that Jim Jordan is complaining about. But that's what he wants. He wants communications between Fonnie Willis and special counsel Jack Smith. Greg Sargent goes on to say his entire game is to spread just enough vague impressions of wrongdoing to sow doubts in perhaps the mind of one juror in any given case. And that is the whole point of these Jim Jordan investigations.
Yeah, and what's frustrating about it, so there was some reporting that the purpose of the visit was to interview a White House professional staff member who had been employed at the White House during the time Trump was president. So that was the reason for a visit. There may have been a second one for another interview, but for Jay Brad, I think, was for that interview. Now, let's take a step back and say the whole reason we know this is because this White House, like every other White House except for Donald J. Trump's White House, publishes the visitor log. So we know that who visited because they make that a matter of public record, unlike Donald J. Trump in the 4 years of his presidency, where, try as you may, you're not going to find that because they didn't release that. Now, having said that, the other broader thing that's really aggravating about this is, look, Jim Jordan's a knucklehead. And none of these things, to Greg Sargent's point, to what you were saying, every single time he brings something up, it is clearly BS, but I'll be damned if there aren't members of the mainstream media who give it at least a little bit of attention, who repeat the allegation without just simply saying, hey, look, you have a record of nonsense. You have a record of making stuff up, of having no results, of dealing in innuendo, and you and James Comer time and time and time again come up with absolutely nothing, less than nothing. And an inability on the part of people just to say, we're not going to cover this. We're not going to report on it. It still gets reported out. And to your point, maybe that one juror looks at CNN or whatever newspaper, you know, whatever they're listening to and says, huh, well, wow, there's an investigation. They're trying to get the records and they're being stonewalled. Then there must be shenanigans. That's what the goal is. And we still, you know, what are we from 2016, 7 years later? Still haven't learned our lesson about how to cover this nonsense. Still enabling.
Yeah.
And that's why they're doing it. No doubt about it.
Yep. 100%. And you know, more broadly speaking, I know Will Bunch just did a piece on how, in general, the media's coverage of this entire situation, that we're covering elections the same way we were covering them in the 20th century. And we need to stop it, because we don't have two serious political parties in this country anymore, as Judge Luttig said, right? It's gotten quite a bit different. It's off the rails at this point. He actually said there is no Republican Party. It's not a party at this point because of what they're doing. So in my opinion, Jim Jordan is just going to continue to alienate independent voters, all Democrats and a handful of Republicans even. When you talk about Trump supporters, you're talking about a third of the Republican Party, and the Republican Party represents a third of voters. So you're talking about a third of a third. You know, it's not that many people, but it's enough to fracture the party. And that's why you see all of the candidates kowtowing to Trump. And it's going to be the end of Lindsey Graham said he'll destroy us and we'll deserve it. And he still hasn't deleted that tweet, probably because he could say, I told you so at some point later. I don't know, but it's certainly headed that way. All right. We're going to take one more quick break and we'll come back with some final stuff, including me live watching Pete Navarro standing 10 feet away while I was sitting.
Interview our news correspondent, Allison Gill, and hear all about today's proceedings.
The Pete Navarro hearing. All right, everybody, stick around. We'll be right back.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, welcome back. Time for our Hall of Fame patrons. Thank you going above and beyond. Your support of this program and podcast is exceptional. And we have a very dear place in our heart for all of you. And so without further ado, to punk rock liberal D. Pavado, BackdropBooks.com, Another Minneapolitan, Sloan Russell, Kirkland J. Bateman, I'm a Trash Bag from Arizona, and Allison?
Ah, yes. And I'm fast at sex, but can't figure out why when poo-poo there's pee-pee, but when pee-pee no poo-poo, pulls help, which I think is short for please help. Thank you for that wonderful name. At first I was like, when we first got that Hall of Famer, I was like, is that a troll? I'm like, no, that's a Hall of Famer for a long time now. That's just what they want me to say. So there you go. All right. So this morning I was at Prettyman, the federal courthouse in D.C. I watched the Judge Chutkan hearing.
So I want to back up, because some of this, like, I've been in there and clearly you have, but I want you to paint. I'm going to butt in and ask you all kinds of questions, because two reasons. One, I think people see the video from outside the courthouse, but they don't get a lot of, like, you know, what you have to do to walk in. Do you have to buy tickets? What's the process? And like that. And then the other thing is, like, one of the main things about our judicial system is its openness. You can go to your local federal, state, county courthouse and walk in and watch this. And that's what you did. So walk me through, like, what do you, like, when did you show up and what do you do to figure out where you're going and how do you get in there?
Yeah, well, I got dropped off on C Street, and I walked through the little park there to the backside of the Prettyman Courthouse, of the complex, with a sign that actually says Prettyman. The front says something different. I walked through the door. I went through security, which is a magnetometer, and put my bag through the conveyor belt, much like at the airport. There was no line. There was one guy out front with a sign dressed as Trump, but that was it. Everybody else was media. And then I walked down the hall. There's a line of people. There's a public line and then a place where if you're press, you can sign in. So I am a part of the White House Correspondents Association. So I go to the press thing. Maybe I get some better seat or something. And he's like, nah, there's not enough people in line for the public. Everybody will have a seat in the courthouse today, in the hearing room today. Oh, okay, which is number 9, right? So first of all, it's definitely a federal building in that it smells like people have smoked in there for decades. the deck is waxed, like got at least 100,000 coats of wax on it, going back to however old the building is. The bulkheads have been painted 100 times. Like, it's definitely a federal building. The bathrooms all have the tiles in them from, you know, the mid-century of the last century. There's wooden chairs and benches that are worn down. They have, like butt prints worn in them from people sitting on them for just years and years and years. So it's definitely a federal building, you could tell. Like, they can't get the budget to redecorate. But it's solemn and quiet, and everybody's very serious. We're standing in line, and here's the cool thing, Pete. There were a bunch of patrons of our show, of the Daily Beans, of Glenn Kirshner's show. And I'm in there, and you know, I live on the West Coast, so I know all these reporters by seeing them on television and by reading their stuff online. But Adam Klasfeld walks by. I spoke to him. Kyle Cheney. We had Glenn Kirshner in the building, Scott McFarlane, Ryan Riley, Evan Perez, excuse me. Like, all these folks were there. Betsy Woodruff Swan, just people that I know from doing what I do for so long. So saying hi, talking, everybody was very excited to be there. Then they brought us up 10 at a time in the elevator and brought us into the courtroom. No cell phones. You had to turn your cell phone off. I got in a little bit of trouble because I was holding my cell phone as we were walking into the thing. And the guy's like, step aside, ma'am. And I was like, oh, and he like, let's show me your photo roll. And I'm like, okay. So I show him the photo roll. He was making sure that I didn't have any photos from, I wasn't even in the courtroom yet, but he wanted to make sure I didn't have any photos of inside the building. I'm not sure. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't a deviant.
They are serious about their job, and I remember like people like scowling, like the marshals inside the courtroom, and there's like a no chewing gum rule, and so never mind your phone, but like I remember like going there with some agents, and like one poor guy was sitting there chewing gum, and like the gum and the scowling, like court security officer like literally pointing towards the person and then telling him, making a little motion like Trump to Corcoran, like the little plucking motion, like take the damn gum out of your mouth. But anyway, sorry. So no joke. So I'm glad you passed muster with your phone.
And then I'm seated in my bench, right? Everybody's filed in. And then I asked the guy, like one of the marshals, I was like, can I sit up there with those people? Because they're friends of mine. He's like, ma'am, sit where you are. I'm like, okay, all right. And then I go into my purse to get a pen because I want to write stuff down. He's like, what are you doing in your purse? Like, they're very on top of it. Like, it's almost like a comedy club in New York. Just to make sure you don't take your phone out. But then, you know, it was like any other court hearing on any other day. You know, the judge walks in, we all rise, everybody is seated, and they begin, she makes an opening statement, they begin their arguments. Jack Smith was there, Harry Dunn was seated behind Jack Smith. Jack Smith was on the prosecution side, and behind the prosecution table was Jack Smith, and then the press behind him. And then behind the defense table was the public. The public was all seated. So I'm catty corner from Jack Smith. I'm behind him by a couple rows and about, I don't know, I'm 15, 20 feet away. And I kept looking over at him to see what his reaction was. Because the public's reaction when somebody said something dumb or funny or out of line, or when Lauro was presenting his side of the case with, you know, adamance and fervor and using, calling the government absurd and liberty and justice, you know, his going off on his thing. President Trump, one time he accidentally called him Mr. Trump and corrected himself to say President Trump. I'm sorry, President Trump, I meant.
Unbelievable.
And I'm watching, and my facial reactions are like, huh? Or shaking my head or nodding my head or like, yeah, or like, you know, open the fridge, you know, fist in the air, yeah, fist pump. But Jack Smith, stoic, didn't shake his head, didn't nod his head, except for one time when the judge said, the Department of Justice has definitely gone out of their way above and beyond the consideration for discovery, where they have organized it in such a way that it makes it, this is like the... so easy for the defense. No other defendant has these considerations. And Jack Smith nodded his head a little bit. But most of the time, he just stroked the beard, you know, like he was thinking, but just stared right ahead and watched the proceeding. And I wrote about it in detail on Post, where you can find me at Mueller, She Wrote. I've got everything in there. And, you know, she came back with that March 4th decision of 2024, which is where we figured it would end up. But you should read my piece, because her arguments are identical to the arguments that the Department of Justice made and that I reiterated in a Twitter thread. So it went right exactly the way that I thought it would. And then after that was up, we all got up, we all walked out. We talked a little bit about that. And then we're like, hey, Navarro's testifying next door. Do you want to go? You want to go check that out? I'm like, hell yeah. Nobody's in the Navarro hearing. He's, you know, he doesn't draw a crowd.
Which he should, because how did you find Peter Navarro, Allison?
Okay, so first of all, he wouldn't sit down when he was called to the stand. You know, there's a chair up there with a screen where you can look at exhibits. He wouldn't sit down. He wanted to stand. And so he would stand back in that corner back there and kind of pace around and, you know, have his chin in his hand, and every time he had to look at an exhibit, he had to run up to the chair and look at it. And he was such a dick. He was just such a dick. Like the prosecution, when they were cross-examining, was like, do you see this email? Can you see this exhibit? And he's like, I can see it. And he's like, can you read the first thing? And he's like, well, you didn't ask me if I could read it. You just asked me if I could see it. I'm not close enough to see it. And then he's like, all right, could you step close enough to where you can read it? Are you able to read it? Yeah, I can see it. He's just like, all right, read the first lines. And then he would go, I was doing it, Peter Navarro, blah, 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 blah. Like he would just like fly through it and mumble it. He was just a dick. And all this guy was trying to do was ask him about when he testified earlier that day in that courtroom, just 20 minutes ago, half hour ago, didn't you say this? I don't recall. You said that you didn't have any emails from Trump that get granted executive privilege. Didn't you say that just earlier today? I don't know that's true. You know, just like, just being that way. You know what I mean? Like, ugh. Yeah. And Woodward, by the way, good old Stanley Woodward was his attorney. And you know, he came up and made a few arguments, and then when it was time for Navarro to step down, he walked over to the defense table, but he wouldn't sit down at the defense table either. He stood up kind of behind it and walked around it with, you know, like like just a weirdo, and just trying to just one of those people who's purposefully a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, when you're kids and sometimes, you know, like, I'm thinking like kindergartners or first or second graders, and let alone, you know, if you're not even ADHD, but sometimes it's like, you know, you got all kinds of energy and you haven't learned to control yourself. And it's like, all right, well, you can, you know, stand by your desk, but you need to keep at least one hand on the chair or the desk so that you're, you know, in place and we can have class. It's the same. Like, what gets me is all the... These are the folks most into, well, we need strong, you know, people need to respect the law and respect the process. And if anybody, I guarantee you, if there were any sort of court proceeding where, God forbid, it wasn't a white man behaving that way, there would be no end of criticism and mockery about, you know, how dare they go, you know, they're cheapening our judicial process and disrespecting the court, and it's awful, and it's indicative of what all the immigrants are doing to this guy. There would just be a nonstop spew of bile. But when it comes to him, when it comes to Pete Navarro, rules don't apply, you know. And again, this is none of this, by the way, I'm sure, but did judge betray any emotion whatsoever watching this display? Or I got to imagine they're probably stone-faced.
Yeah, it was Judge Amit Mehta, and he was just like, okay. Although he did say a couple of things that kind of made me laugh. He's like, look, you're trying to tell me, Mr. Woodward, that your client believes that Donald Trump invoked executive privilege over his testimony, and that is why he defied the subpoena for the January 6th Select Committee. But there's, what are the, you don't even have the words. Like Peter Navarro, when he testified, your client, when he testified, couldn't even tell me what words were whispered to him or whatever. He's like, he said that's pretty weak sauce. Mm. He actually said the term weak sauce.
Weak sauce, nice.
And then he goes, I wasn't paraphrasing. And then he goes, look, I mean, maybe there are no magic words for invocation of privilege, of executive privilege, but I don't have any words. Were there smoke signals, he said? Was there anything like, and of course, you know, they're just obfuscating and, well, you know, we believe. And at some point he was like, well, later on, Donald Trump announced that he was trying to invoke executive privilege over all that stuff. And the Judge Mehta was like, yeah, but that was after Pete Navarro defied the subpoena. You can't apply some sort of a privilege that you didn't have yet to some shit that happened in the past. He didn't say shit, to things that happened in the past. And it just went on that way for a very long time. And finally, I was like, I got to get out of here. I can't. This is the most annoying shit. It was hard to sit through that kind of, I guess, tiptoeing around reality. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating listening to you. I can't imagine what, you know, being in there and what that must have felt like to, you know, see somebody in the flesh. I've heard, you know, stories both of the way Navarro, you know, behaved towards the FBI interacting with him, as well as his general, you know, interaction with others, whether he was at the White House or members of the media. I mean, the guy is, I think, universally seen as largely a dick. I mean, just very impolite, aggressive, full of himself, obstinate, and just not in a quiet way, in a like in your face, demonstrably aggressive way. And it's, you know, again, it is what will be filling the next Trump administration if that comes to pass, you know, assuming he's not in jail, if we ever get to the point of jailing him for contempt, which who knows. So what's the next step with Navarro? Did the judge set any dates for an appearance or anything like that?
They're expecting a ruling on Wednesday, which is when this show airs. Everybody that was there, I talked to some folks from NBC and Politico. We were all sort of the, after watching the interactions with his counsel and him and the judge, everybody was of the mind that this motion to dismiss the charge, the first count, would be denied. But, you know, because his argument is that there was executive privilege, and they're just... isn't. It's, as the judge said, a weak sauce claim.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that's...
I hope it's in the decision. I hope that's in the ruling. Weak sauce. Conclusion. Denied.
I suspect...
Based on the above word, your motion is denied.
We'll see. So...
No smoke signals. All weak sauce. Denied.
Well, you had a most excellent day at court today. That's great. We got all kinds of, like, it's like Barbenheimer, but in the Prettyman Courthouse.
What's great is I saw Barbie last night.
What'd you think of Barbie? I have not. I've seen Oppenheimer, not Barbie.
I loved it. I laughed. So I haven't laughed that loud in months. And I actually was crying at certain points because it was just so moving. So
not
see
tears
Barbie.
Of laughter, tears of moving emotion. Oh,
yes.
Great.
Yes. As a Barbie in this world. But super, super fantastic movie. When you get to the point where he's playing guitar for her on the beach, you're going to die. You're going to die. It is so funny. It's truly, truly a really, really good movie. It really is. I encourage everybody to see it. But yeah, that was my Barbie, followed by Judge Chutkin, followed by Pete Navarro. It was a very triple threat. Anyway, one more big, huge thank you to all our patrons,
sure.
Hall of Famers and new. We couldn't do this without you. This show costs a lot. And so we appreciate you helping us out with that. If you want to sign up to be a patron, you can do it at patreon.com/aisle45pod, AISLE45POD. I don't have any final thoughts. I'm looking forward to seeing the resolution of some of these hearings we could talk about this weekend on the bonus episode for patrons. But aside from that, I'm looking forward to heading home. I get to actually be home for quite a while, a few weeks at a time. It's nice.
Yeah, for sure. And best yet, you'll from the comfort of your own home, a week from as you're listening to this, we'll be watching that conga line of arraignments down in Georgia. So get comfortable, whatever pitcher of martini or margarita or whatever your drinking choice is.
Cocktail, anything.
And they'll all be, presumably, all be televised, right? So we'll get to watch.
Yep. The arraignment will be televised, and they have signed the official order that all proceedings in Fulton County will be televised. So, interesting. I can't wait. All right, everybody, thank you so much. We will see you next week. I've been Allison Gill.
And I'm Pete Strzok.
Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo design are by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.